Boo and Eagle to episode 7 of Take It Black. I'm Jack Lattimore.
Yerdum Rung, I'm Ray Johnston.
Good to have you back, Ray.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
It's been a few weeks, I think, since you've co-hosted an episode of Take It Black. You benched yourself when we were talking footy, and then I understand you self-isolated for a week. And then I was on the road to deliver last week's episode focused on Womadelaide.
That's right, Jack. Anyone who knows me knows how little I know about footy. I'm an absolute disgrace. But I had a bit of a sore throat and a cough and a sniffly nose. And because it's better to be safe than sorry, that means I've been keeping myself away from as many people as possible. Because like everyone else on the planet, I'm pretty much focused on the COVID-19 or coronavirus pandemic right now. And that's what this episode of Take It Black will be about as well. Answering everyone's questions, separating facts from fiction. We've got a bit of everything you need to know.
And we're recording in pretty extraordinary circumstances in terms of our setup. You're on the phone in Sydney. Usually we're in a studio.
That is where I am. I am on my phone. I'm in my wardrobe. I've got my phone, my microphone, I've got my laptop in front of me glowing in the dark. I'm sitting on a cushion. It's pretty cramped. I've got a small wardrobe. This is where I'm recording from. If you head to my Instagram, you'll see a really lovely photo of my setup I've got actually.
You may need to pop the door a little bit because we're sounding a little bit like you're underwater. And I am in the submarine, which is what I call the bottom bunk of my son's bunk beds in his room. And I've created, well, he and I have created a pillow fort, which is also
amazing.
A podcasting recording studio. We've got doonas up. We've got pillows stuffed into the sides against the wall. And I'm sitting in the dark and it's just the glow, the colourful glow from the mobile podcast recording kit or the deck that I have. So, yeah, we've kind of cobbled this together, this episode, which I kind of like, Ray, because part of the discipline that interests me about podcasts is low budget, lo-fi.
Absolutely.
And, we're bringing this. I had a go at it last episode for the Revolutionary Music episode that came out of the Womadelaide trip, recorded on the road. I'm kind of glad I did because I ironed out a lot of kinks doing that, and we could be doing Take It Black like this for the foreseeable future, Ray.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even think of that. We could be doing this for a really long time. We better get good at it.
Well, we've got hopefully we're still going to be able to access our post-production people to polish it up for us. But, yeah, I mean, this is really a throwback to past days. Feels a bit like the guerrilla radio, alternative radio, that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the great things about podcasting is that it's accessible to so many people now. You know, and I think with so many people around the world, either in self-isolation or forced isolation by their government, depending on what kind of measures their local government has made, it's a really good way of getting your stories out into the world and to kind of take control of the media a little bit. So we can, hide away in wardrobes all over the world and tell everyone what's happening.
And it still connects us.
In our cities and in our towns.
That's right. It connects us as well, right? It still fosters that sense of community too, which is important when we are self-isolating. Now, let's talk self-isolation. Let's talk all things COVID-19 coronavirus. What have we got on the slate today?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking a little bit about the PM's press conference that was held on Wednesday morning. We're going to be doing a little bit of a Q&A using questions that have been asked by our listeners and by our viewers on NITV, and we have sourced a whole bunch of answers to these questions from experts and research, and we're going to do a bit of a wrap of what's locked down, what's cancelled, what's closed, suspended, postponed, on hiatus, called off. There's a lot of things that aren't happening anymore, and I think it's probably important that we go over those, but there's some things that might still be going ahead.
Yeah,
And there's also ways that we can support still organisations, communities, artists, people that are suffering from everything being shut down as well.
Yeah, cool. I think AFL and NRL are the only things, and maybe A-League, that are still going ahead, it feels like. Everything else shut down.
Yeah, and Gama might still be happening, but we'll see what happens there. Most things have been completely either suspended or cancelled, though, which is the safe thing to do, but also pretty the same for not only the attendees, but the people who are relying on these festivals for a major source of their income. And we don't know what kind of benefit anyone will get, any kind of compensation anyone will get from the government in regards to this. This is an unprecedented thing, so we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, there's still so many questions being asked out there in community by our mobs right now.
Yeah, for sure.
And a very little clarity being provided from our government, our federal government. I think the states and territories have been a little bit clearer up to this point. And certainly what we've heard from the federal government conflicts with some of the things that we're witnessing and hearing from internationally.
Yeah, not only internationally, but also anecdotally, locally. We've been given a whole lot of information about when to go get tested and how to make that happen, and then people's actual experiences of trying to access these services have been completely off base. People who should be being tested for COVID-19 are being turned away from clinics because they don't meet specific criteria, or the clinic is not informed of people's contact with confirmed cases. So there's a lot of confusion happening out there, and hopefully we can help clarify a little bit of that today.
Take it black. And Ray, let's work through answering some of those questions that our viewers on NITV and listeners from the Take It Black podcast have put to us.
Sure, let's do it.
Well, let's start at the top. What are the symptoms that we should be on the lookout for?
So the problem that we've got here is that COVID-19 coronavirus, you'll get much the same symptoms as if you just had a regular flu or a cold. So there needs to be specific things to keep an eye out for. If you've got a dry cough with an itchy throat, if you have difficulty breathing, and especially if you have a fever, you really need to be keeping an eye out for that. A lot of places won't test you if you don't have a fever as well as the other symptoms, but they definitely won't test you unless you've been overseas in the last 14 days or been in contact with a confirmed case of COVID-19. The best thing to do if you're worried about any of the symptoms that you have is to call the helpline. There is a helpline that you can call. The number is 1-800-020-080. They're saying don't go straight to the doctor at the moment. You call the helpline first. And there's also a website, healthdirect.com.au, that has a quiz that you can do that has a whole bunch of symptoms. It's like a symptom checker. If you qualify certain criteria, it tells you what the next best thing that you should be doing is. So you could very well be sitting at home with a dry cough, itchy throat, have difficulty breathing, have a fever. But unless you can show that you've been overseas in the last 14 days or you've been in contact with someone who has tested positive, it's actually unlikely that you will have access to a test yourself. So the best thing that you can do is to look after yourself. Obviously, contact 000 if you have difficulty breathing at any point. If things are getting tough for you and you're worried about things, and just isolate yourself from as many people as possible while trying to look after yourself, really. It's pretty tricky.
It is tricky, and there's a few points you made there that we will touch on again when we discuss Wednesday morning's presser that involved the PM, Scott Morrison, and the Chief Medical Officer, Brendan Murphy. But let's press ahead just for the moment. Am I allowed to go for a walk in the open air, bushwalking, hiking, that sort of thing?
Yeah, unless you have been quarantined, unless you're someone who has been told to self-isolate for 14 days because you've come back from overseas, or unless you've tested positive and you should be in isolation, hiking, bushwalking is fine. I would always recommend walking with someone, but stick to people that you already live with, rather than adding new people to your mix of people that you're socialising with. I'd also not do anything risky that might mean you need medical attention. Our health services are already under enough pressure without, you know, dealing with your twisted ankle because you've gone down a path that you're not familiar with. But I genuinely believe that getting out bush, you know, going for a hike, breathing in the fresh air, getting away from the city is probably a really good idea if you do it. Just minimize contact with other people on the trails. Make sure they're keeping your social distancing up. If you need to buy a national park pass or anything, try to do it alone before you get out to minimize contact with people at the booth, and stay safe.
Excellent advice. I don't have any trouble there. I am just laying on the couch in front of the Netflix. The most activity, we're self-isolating at home. I'm just hammering the Xbox 360 Kinect, Ray.
Amazing. I've been playing Beat Saber with the PlayStation VR. So getting your exercise while you're at home as well. There's a couple of YouTube tools that I recommend too. Yoga with that is really good. And Splendor, they do some really good little bodyweight exercises because, you know, even though most of the gyms aren't closed, you are highly likely to come into contact with a lot of bacteria, viruses and germs in a closed environment. So I'm playing it safe and staying away from the gym.
Yeah.
But I do know that a lot of the gyms are still open and they're practicing social distancing measures as well, and they're doing deep cleans and then minimizing the number of people that could be in classes and making sure people stay separate from each other. But there are definitely ways to stay fit at home, and it's still okay to take the dog for a walk too. You just really need to keep that 1.5 meters between yourself and other people, and don't go around hugging everyone and shaking hands and kissing people on the cheek. Just stay away, don't touch people.
Now, speaking of cleaning, what are good household cleaning products for surfaces? Are we talking bleach, Domestos, you know, break out the steam cleaner? Do I have to sterilize stuff? What's the good routine? And I guess around how long does a virus stay on stuff?
Yeah, well, the latest research, we're learning so many things about this virus. As we go, our scientists and researchers are working overtime to understand everything about it and try to work out a way to kill it. So this virus can last up to 3 days on surfaces is the latest research that's come out. So you need to clean the ones you're touching the most often. So clean down your kitchen bench, clean down your bathroom, you know, anything that you're touching, doorknobs, light switches. This is a good time, if you can, to get some automated things in your home. I reckon, you know, grab a Google Home or an Alexa and try to automate your lights.
So get it delivered. Get it delivered. Don't go out. Get it delivered.
No. Get it delivered. Don't go out. They'll start delivering things with drones soon, you watch. But, yeah, a good reminder as well is to make sure that you're washing your hands several times a day. I set a reminder on my phone for like every hour or so. A little alarm will go off and I'll just go wash my hands again. Antibacterial products are useless with this particular virus because
is this the gel stuff you're talking about?
Yeah. No, not necessarily the sanitizer. The hand sanitizer will help with
things. You just cut out there. Do you want to repeat that one?
Yeah, sure. The hand sanitizer is fine. It won't kill it, but it'll help keep things clean. But antibacterial products in particular, so, you know, your antibacterial wipes, you know, anything that is like Dettol, basically, because this isn't a bacteria, it's a virus. So it's not going to kill it. What kills it is bleach and soap. So anything that's not on your body, use bleach. Anything that's on your body, use soap. That's the easiest way to go about it. It's also the cheapest too.
I just
get a bottle of bleach, dilute it. You don't need fancy products.
Yeah, I just spray that diluted bleach all over myself.
Not on your skin.
Everyone thinks I'm going crazy, but I don't know. Maybe it's cabin fever.
Yeah, please don't spray bleach on yourself. Bleach on things that aren't skin.
Now, if we have a chronic illness or weak immune systems, should we just self-isolate with our families as soon as we can?
Yes. You absolutely should. I don't think that the government's been clear enough on this advice.
No, it hasn't.
If you have an compromised immune system, and you know, if you have people in your family that are at risk and susceptible, if you can, if it's possible, please self-isolate. I just think that it's much better to be safe than sorry. And there are people out there, I've seen them walking around coughing on stuff, coughing on people, sneezing, touching stuff with their hands. And I know that we shouldn't be panicking. Mm-hmm. Panicking's another thing altogether. But there's people out there that really aren't making sure that they're looking after everyone else. They're being really selfish. And if there's someone in your family that's sick, if you can stay home, just please stay home. You'll hear a lot from people at the moment about what's called flattening the curve. And what they're talking about is the pandemic curve. You might see these graphs online where the rate of infection just keeps doubling and doubling and doubling when it gets to a certain point. And, you know, where there might have been 5 new cases yesterday, there's 100 new cases today. And the only way to stop that rise in infections or to help contain it is to isolate ourselves as much as possible to help stop the spread, because you or I might be sick. We might be carrying this virus and we have no idea. And because we don't have access to the tests, we won't know that we are the ones, you know, carrying it around and giving it to people. So if you can self-isolate, whether you have a compromised immune system or not, I say do it, but especially if you're already sick. I think it's just the safest thing to do.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, even amongst people I know and family, in certain areas, they're saying that this is just another flu, that it's just another scenario like in 2009 when the swine flu was made a big issue of. But it's a little bit more than that, isn't it, Ray? I mean, is there any harm in self-isolating, flattening the curve, even if we're wrong, even if all of the indication, all of the science is wrong? It seems like it's still the most sensible thing to do.
Absolutely. There is no harm in self-isolating. There are only benefits for self-isolating from a broader population perspective. I think it is important to recognise that self-isolating is a lot harder for some people than others. It's not possible for some people, depending on their jobs, that they still might have to go to, especially if you're working in healthcare.
Or supermarkets. And
exactly. And it's hard for some people to self-isolate as well, you know, if you are already dealing with, you know, mental health issues. It's particularly hard if you have depression and you have to be on your own. So working out ways to maintain contact with the outside world still is really important. Obviously, I'm a big advocate for video games. I reckon everyone should be jumping online and playing video games together at this point in time, if you can. But no, there's no harm in self-isolating and helping to stop the spread of this at all. Obviously, there's measures that you need to put into place in your own life to make that possible. But if you can do it, do it. Please do it. It's just the best thing. Seeing people out in bars and clubs and things here in Australia, when you're in New York or LA, or, you know, even obviously look at Italy as well, everything is shut down to help stop this spread. And we've got people just carrying on like as though nothing's happening. It's not being paranoid. It's being safe.
It's being smart. is what it is.
Exactly.
Lock it down.
Exactly.
All right.
That's it.
Can I get this bloody thing twice?
We don't know. This is the bad thing.
Is it going to be like that time I got chicken pox again?
We don't know enough about this particular virus to know whether or not you can get it twice. There have been some cases. I believe there was one case where there was a man who tested positive, recovered, tested negative, and then tested positive again. However, they don't know if that was just the test, because these tests are being developed and refined as well. So it's all just so new. And you know, keep in mind, it usually takes years and years of a virus like this to have tests developed, to have vaccines developed, to find out everything that we need to know in order to fight it. Everyone's working overtime at full pelt to get this sorted. We just don't know at this point. So if you have tested positive and recovered, I don't think that you should be wandering around like as though, you know, you're all good now and everything is safe. I think you still need to be playing it safe, still wash your hands, still maintain social distancing, self-isolate if you can. It might take a while for this to all pass over.
Now, I'm going to throw this one in. Is it a virus that only affects or impacts the elderly?
No, this is a huge myth. You are more susceptible to it if you are elderly. We don't quite know why, but you know, a lot of the research is pointing to it being something more impacted by elderly people because they do have compromised immune systems. We have had more cases of elderly people you know, contract the virus, but there's also cases of people in their 20s and 30s you know, getting coronavirus and dying from this. It's not something that won't affect you because of your age. Obviously, it's going to impact the elderly more. That's what we know, but you're not immune because you're young. And in fact, you could be carrying it and just not have any symptoms and be passing it along.
That's also that's right. It's also the case that we've seen in Italy already, that people in their 30s and their late 20s who have no underlying risks in terms of health issues contracting the virus and you know, some of them are dying.
Exactly. So I don't think that it's fair to assume that anyone is exempt from this. We all need to be being as careful as possible. I think that that's just the best way forward.
And I'll throw another one at you just off the cuff. Is there any, or where are we at with coming up with anything that can combat COVID-19?
We're about 18 months away from a vaccine for this. In terms of treatment, it's still being developed as well. I think at the moment, everyone's just doing their best with what they have and the information that they have. Honestly, 18 months to develop a vaccine is an incredible turnaround. That is unprecedented. And there are human trials being conducted at the moment in the US. So we are moving faster on this than we have moved on any kind of viral infection anywhere previously. But we're still a long way away. And I don't think that we can just be thinking that we can, you know, we've got a vaccine around the corner and everything's going to be okay. I think the best thing that we can do at the moment is to maintain hygiene as much as humanly possible. Keep that social distancing, self-isolate if you can, and keep an eye on your symptoms. Hopefully, I'm hoping that our government will expand the testing to more people, because we are getting more and more cases of people that are just getting it from each other here in Australia,
yeah,
as opposed to getting it from people who have come from overseas.
And we're also working off a false data model at the moment, because
exactly,
it's only people that are coming back in. Imported cases is the term that was used in the press conference on Wednesday by Brendan Murphy. But there's no, that doesn't provide us with any insight into transmissions amongst, you know, for want of a better word, resident community.
Yeah, exactly. We simply have no idea. of what our true numbers of people that are carrying or, you know, are currently dealing with COVID-19 are, because that testing just isn't as widely available as it needs to be. Obviously, a shortage of testing is an issue, as it has been in the US. We had, President Donald Trump over there saying that everyone who needs access to a test will have one. And then, you know, other members of his government turned around and went, yeah, we actually don't have enough tests for that. So it's obviously incredibly likely that we're dealing with the same issue here in Australia. I don't believe that we're getting full transparency on all of this. It does seem like a lot of decisions are made in order to have the least impact possible on the economy right now, as opposed to actually looking after the health of all of our people here. So, look, I'm a little bit worried. I'm alert, not alarmed, coming to you from the floor of my wardrobe in self-isolation.
Well, we will get to those issues shortly. Let's just round off a couple more questions that are really pertinent to our mobs. Now, sure. Smoking ceremonies. Yeah. We had a question come in, said, I'm wondering if smoking ceremonies have been used before to help respiratory problems. I've seen them used to keep away infection, etc. It's been scientifically proven that they can and they do. And apparently this virus doesn't like hot temperatures.
That's right. The virus doesn't like hot temperatures, which is a worry as we go into cooler weather. But looking specifically at smoking ceremonies. So emu bush in particular, when you heat the leaves, you know, the smoke that is emitted has an antimicrobial property, which means it kills microorganisms, including bacteria and viruses. So a smoking ceremony could absolutely help with COVID-19. We don't know. It's worth a shot. It can't hurt. And it has helped with respiratory issues in the past as well. So I reckon let's do it. Let's just smoke the whole country.
Well, we've just seen that as well recently. That's the other thing that I've been reading overnight. Some of the nature's reactions to the measures that humans, society, has had to take in regards to the coronavirus. We've seen through satellite imagery the levels of pollution drop in the last 3 or 4 weeks, a phenomenal drop. We're seeing swans on the canals of Venice, things like that. Yeah. Nature moving back into these spaces where society is operated exclusively for a period and had such detrimental effects on the climate and on the environment. And it's one of those things that you kind of see in science fiction movies, right?
Oh, it's incredible. It really does highlight the massive, massive impact we are having on the environment, on this planet. It's like genuinely wonderful to see, you know, things regenerating and clearer water in the canals in Venice, and the fact that that could happen within, you know, a week or two as opposed to years. You would anticipate that a reversal of pollution like that would take years, but it just really does highlight what impact we have, and that itself is quite scary too, because this isn't going to be forever, obviously. And that recovery won't last forever either. I'm hoping that people might look at things like that and it might help change their behaviour about, you know, what they do and how they do it. And
that's right.
See that change is possible. I think when we're in a world where we're talking about, oh, what difference can one person make in regards to things like climate change, I think that this highlights the difference that one person can make when it's, you know, everyone working together. Not everyone needs to be perfect in how they look after the environment, but we need everyone to try.
Yeah,
and I think this might
provides us, you know, with different perspectives on scenarios and circumstances that we haven't taken the time, perhaps, to consider fully previously.
Yeah,
some of the positives around coronavirus, I guess. But look, what final question is, and this one's important for our mobs, what are the risks with attending sorry business and funeral services, and how can I safeguard myself?
Obviously, if, you know, you've been off country and you're heading back home, there are risks there that you might be, you know, carrying the virus back into the community. There are communities that have completely shut down to anyone coming back home now, and, you know, to any outsiders, obviously, visiting has shut down, particularly in APY land, parts of the Northern Territory as well. Obviously, gatherings over, you know, certain numbers of people as well. So, you know, indoor gatherings of 100 people, outdoor gatherings of 500 people have been banned by the government. I personally believe that those numbers are still too high. And I think it's really, really difficult, and really, really difficult times, obviously. You know, sorry business is incredibly important. But I think that we all need to be looking at and weighing up the risks of, you know, heading home and exposing our old people to this virus, who will not have the same access to, you know, healthcare that, you know, mob in the city will. So, yeah, this is the toughest one, I think.
Yep.
But obviously, it's a you know, decision to be made within your own mob, within your own family. But the general advice is to not head back home if there is any risk at all that you have been in touch with anyone that has contracted this virus at all.
Yeah, if this virus gets into our remote communities and our elderly and vulnerable are affected by it, it will be devastating.
Absolutely. It will be completely devastating. We're, you know, talking about people already with, you know, in compromised immune systems, you know, dealing with, you know, huge rates of things like diabetes, and it's just another thing thrown into the mix that will make life extremely difficult. You know, and we're talking about, you know, households where you've got multiple people, you know, living under one roof, you know, but things like overcrowding and access to, you know, fresh water and things like that might be an issue in some of these places, as we know. And that will only compound the problem here. You know, when you're talking about needing to maintain a sterile environment as possible with as little people as possible, you know, taking this virus into areas where that is just an impossibility is not going to end well.
Yeah, it seems as though so many of those measures of and issues within the closing the gap spectrum are really at the fore with the introduction of something, you know, as deadly as this virus. And, you know, it's too much ground to make up, and it's too valuable to lose, you know, these people from our communities.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you think about the general population of Australia being at risk of this, you know, when you look at our communities, the risk is even higher. Like, obviously, there's no data on this. No one's done a specific study into it yet, but yeah, we're vulnerable communities, so you just can't risk it. That's my you know, non-expert advice on this, as someone who's just been reading a lot and talking to a lot of people, is just don't risk it.
Well, we've heard from experts this week. I mean, NITV went and spoke with Chris Rella-Baker.
That's right.
And he stressed that he stressed firstly that the peak of COVID-19 is, he expects it to be around May or June. And I've heard it may even be as far back as August. That's the peak. So we're still in the infancy of where this virus is at and our response to it.
Absolutely. And what we do in this period of time is crucial as to how much of an impact this virus is going to have on the population. So, you know, the more people you're exposed to at this point, the more likely this is to spread, and that's for people who are carrying it or not. You know, we just don't know who we're coming into contact with, and where they've been and who they've been in contact with themselves. So, Yeah, self-isolation, hand washing, keeping everything clean, and just unfortunately, in times like this, you know, if you're not home already,
lock it down.
Probably don't go back.
Lock it down, Ray.
Now, lock it down.
Dr. Alan Baker also emphasised that his major concern is with the vulnerable within remote communities. So
yeah,
the experts,
absolutely,
they're aware of it. Pat Turner, there's a and the NACHO, the advisory group to cabinet, they're right on top of it. They're saying, even Michael Gunner, the chief minister in the NT, considering shutting down the borders of the NT. Everyone is aware of how deadly and devastating this could be if it gets into our remote communities.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not just me saying it, it's all the experts too.
Now, let's talk about that presser.
Yeah.
Wednesday's press conference between the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and the Chief Medical Officer, Brandon Murphy. Now, there was a few interesting and confusing points made during that presser, right?
Yeah, there certainly were. I think the one that got the most vocal backlash online in particular I saw was the decision to have schools remain open. And this was in what it could only appear to me to be in direct contradiction with the ban on gatherings of people. Obviously, there's rural and remote schools that only have small amount of students, but most of the schools in Australia have more than 100 students, have more than 500 students even. So to be having them gathered in one area and expect them not to touch each other. have they met kids? Like, they're licking each other's faces right now at school, I guarantee you.
Now, Wales and Scotland, overnight Wednesday, our time, they closed. They announced that they were going to close schools by Friday. Now, this was mere 9-12 hours after we heard from the PM and the Chief Medical Officer around, using language like it's in the national interest for schools to remain open. The PM said that. The PM also said the virus operates differently for younger people. Now, we know, the world knows, that that isn't necessarily the case, as we discussed just before.
Absolutely.
But then there was this contradictory language used, like children can be asymptomatic. Now,
there were a lot of contradictions happening there. Yeah, at the same time, children aren't at risk. You know, it's fine for all children to hang out with each other, but also children might be carrying this and we don't know. It was incredibly confusing.
Yeah. Now, there was also some confusion around Dr. Murphy's saying that every citizen has to think about their interactions with other people. We all need to practice social distancing. He described the social distancing and self-isolation as sensible practices. But then in the same press conference, we had so much rhetoric going towards malls are okay, shopping centres are okay, get out there, that old continue to live your life like nothing else. And just the focus or the economy seemed to be centred, as you said earlier, rather than public health.
Absolutely. And, I think one of the arguments for having the schools remain open was so that the parents of these kids who happen to work in essential services, such as electricity, gas, supermarkets, healthcare, obviously, could continue to get to work. But then what is the reasoning then behind the unis staying open? I don't know too many university students that need to be supervised by their by their parents if they're staying home. It was just a series of very strange seeming decisions made that I believe that we needed a little bit more clarity on. Why is it okay for shopping malls to stay open? I understand keeping a supermarket open so that we can, still have access to the fresh fruit and vegetables and things that we need to survive that we are not in short supply of, mind you, that needs to be put out there. Mm-hmm. But keeping things like universities open makes absolutely zero sense to me. I don't understand, especially in this day and age when most unis are equipped to be able to do remote lectures.
Yeah, well, most of the kids don't go to, don't attend tutes and lectures these days anyway.
Exactly. It's it was just such a bizarre press conference. I think one of my favourite parts was being told off in ScoMo's dad voice. Did you hear his dad voice with the hoarding?
Oh, yes. What did he say? It's silly.
Stop it. Stop hoarding. Stop it. And I'm like, oh, come on. Really didn't need to hear ScoMo's dad voice. But also, what is the point in just telling people to stop doing something instead of addressing the underlying cause behind why they're doing it?
Well, they're panicked, aren't they?
Say to people, people are panicking. People are stocking up on things because they don't know how long it's going to last, what they're going to have access to. What needed to be said was there is no need to panic buy because we don't have any shortages of any products right now. It's literally just us not able to get things back on the shelves quick enough because everyone is purchasing it too quickly. We have enough in Australia to go around. And we've got busloads of people now going out to rural towns and stripping their supermarket shelves. And these are places where people have to drive for an hour to get to the local supermarket. They get there and there's nothing there because busloads of people from the city are there hoarding all their meat. What people needed to be told is that we have enough produce in Australia for everybody. So you don't need to hoard it, rather than just being told to stop it, like as though we're a bunch of insolent children. That's not going to help our fears. It was just bizarre. It was really strange. It gave me an insight into what it would be like to be one of ScoMo's kids.
Well, he spoke about his kids. His kids are still going to school. He brought them in as the example.
Yeah, and he's comfortable with that.
Yeah,
he's comfortable with that. He said many times, "I'm comfortable with my kids still going to school." It's absolutely fascinating to me seeing, for example, the reaction from countries all over the world where that curve we spoke about earlier has been flattened and the measures that they put in place in order for that to happen, and us just blatantly ignoring that to continue with business as usual and instead limiting the amount of tests that we're doing, which artificially deflates the numbers of people that we have testing positive for COVID-19.
Yep.
Yes, our rates of infection aren't higher than any of the other countries because we don't know what they really are. We're only going on the data from the tests. But when you look at Singapore, for example, which was an example that the Prime Minister gave as a country who had kept the schools open and was one of the reasons that they decided to keep our schools open, they're testing every kid that goes to those schools. They're doing temperature tests before they go through the door to make sure that they're all well.
That's not happening here.
Yep. We're not getting any of that here. So we're keeping schools open like other countries that have safety measures put in place that we're not implementing. It's just bizarre decisions.
Yeah, well, we keep saying it was a really bizarre and contradictory press conference. It's possibly the strangest press conference I've seen since that one that NITV chose not to air between Jacinta Price and Josephine Cashman. There was a lot going on and it was difficult to find a line through it. Now, we had Dr. Murphy again saying that the virus will spread. He was saying the short-term lockdowns do not achieve anything. The virus will spread. That's a quote from him. And every time that he said things that were direct like this, the PM seemed to seize the microphone back. And at the end, when he said the virus will spread, the press conference was wrapped up really quickly. Go on.
No, I was just agreeing.
Yeah, well, I was sitting there having a bit of a chuckle at how strange it was. But then it was unusual seeing on social media a lot of people were praising the press conference as being a really successful messaging exercise for the PM?
I think that may have been a case of people hearing what they wanted to hear. I think it's pretty safe to say that that press conference had a little something for everybody in it. And if you just wanted to cherry pick the information that you wanted to hear, it was a good press conference for you as a viewer. But when you look at the overall information and messaging, as you said, Jack, there was so much that was just contradictory. We do know that self-isolation does a lot. We do know that it helps flatten the curve and it helps stop the rate of infection. That's based on not just the experiences of other countries who were hit with this first that we should be turning to for our advice, but also just common sense. It baffles me how much common sense has absolutely just flown out the window in the face of this. If you've got a bunch of people walking around sick, you stay away from them. Hasn't anyone watched any zombie movie ever? Like, it's just... stay away from the infected. If someone shows signs of infection, isolate them. Stay away from all the infected people roaming around on the streets.
Yeah.
And if you're make going sure to that a shopping center, to get through it.
Lock the shopping center down. Push right? push all the benches up against the doors. Close the sliding doors. Arm yourself and get on the roof.
That's it. Everyone needs to watch Zombieland again. do your cardio. You know, make sure you always wear a seatbelt. But no, in all seriousness, because I don't mean to make light of this, this is an absolutely devastating illness that is absolutely going to kill people. Look, and I don't say that to incite panic in any way. It's because it's what it does. And we need to be playing it as safe as possible. And being flippant about it and just trying to continue business as usual is going to be devastating on... you know, people who have compromised immune systems, on the elderly, and on more people than we know. So, we laugh so that we don't cry, but we need to be being safer than what the advice is at the moment from the government, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, there was one aspect of the press conference which I agree with, and that was lifting the restrictions on student nurses to assist. And this is something that I've read about in articles published internationally, which is about mobilising able people to assist with the establishment of medical facilities that are very likely to be required. Using schools as facilities to, you know, makeshift hospital facilities, medical centres, those sorts of things. And I think if we've got student nurses, I think the figure mentioned was around 10,000, that are close to completing their studies or are competent in their studies, there's no reason why they can't be mobilised to assist with what's going to be, by all accounts, even the chief medical officer, this rising number of people and transmissions of the virus.
Absolutely. I completely agree. This is a pandemic. This isn't just a regular day at the hospital. This isn't a one-off accident or emergency. This is something that, as everyone has said, will continue to grow, and we need as much help as possible. And we need to be supporting the medical staff that we currently have that is so incredibly overworked and under so much pressure and stress. If we can mobilise, 10,000 student nurses, the pressure that would ease would be enormous, and the quality of care for people would go up. We don't want a situation like we've seen in other countries where you've got emergency rooms deciding between treating a 40-year-old and a 60-year-old, and that decision means that one of them will die. But that's what's happening at the moment. If we can get more medical assistance on this, we can help avoid things like that happening here.
Now, Ray, there's a fair bit that's been closed, cancelled, put on ice, suspended, having a hiatus, whatever you want to call it. Let's run through some of them to see if we can help our listeners. International flights, indefinite ban on going overseas, historic level 4 for travel to the entire world. That's where we're at.
Yep. You can't leave, basically.
Can't leave.
You can't get on. Can't get on any flights. You can't go anywhere overseas. And any Australians living overseas are being encouraged to head home as soon as possible. But that is mostly due to the fact that airlines are, you know, downing their fleets and cancelling a lot of flights as well. So, yeah, international flights. Sorry. Sorry if you had a trip to Bali. It's not going to happen. Aviation also in regional areas.
Yeah, that's down too. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's to protect vulnerable communities. That's obviously something that is absolutely necessary as well.
Now, state and territory borders remain open. Tasmania has changed theirs overnight.
They're now closed to non-essential travellers. And the Northern Territory is considering closing the border as well. The Tiwi Islands
with a 14-day Tiwi as well. Is that with a 14-day quarantine?
I'm actually not sure on that. I'd have to double check. But yeah, as far as I know, it's just closed.
So this is something that it sounds as though it's likely it might be implemented throughout states and territories.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if this started to be implemented.
Schools open at the moment. We've spoken about elsewhere in the world, Scotland, Wales overnight will close on Friday. Are you expecting a change? They say that they're monitoring the situation. Are you expecting the PM to trundle back out and say, nah, school's off?
I think schools will close. I think they're holding out for the school holidays, if I'm honest. They're only in a couple of weeks' time or a week for some states. Mm-hmm. We're going to see schools and unis close. It's going to be just down to absolute necessity because this will keep spreading and we will need to lock things down. Obviously, there's a whole bunch of events that have been postponed and cancelled as well. NAIDOC Week has been postponed. JP assured us all on the point last night. He's on the committee, obviously, that it's not cancelled, it's just postponed. But I also saw Luke Pearson on Twitter say that they can't cancel NAIDOC Week because it's not a place. It's in our hearts.
Yep.
So we will continue with NAIDOC Week. Laura Dance Festival has been cancelled entirely. Mm-hmm. The Light Festival in Alice has been postponed. So is the National Native Title Conference. GAMA is going ahead as planned at this stage. That's obviously much later in the year, and they're going to change that advice as it happens. Obviously, a whole bunch of festivals and events and plays. This is really hitting the arts hard.
Sydney Festival.
Sydney Writers Festival is gone. We had both Rachel Hocking from NITV and myself. We were appearing on a number of panels and chatting to a bunch of people and not doing that one anymore. That one's cancelled.
Stella Prize.
Opera House has cancelled all of their upcoming performances as well.
Stella Prize is not on. I'm not coming up to Sydney next month.
No, that one's gone as well. MOFO down in Tassie has closed, and also the Mona Museum has temporarily closed as well.
Blues Fest? Where are we at with Blues Fest?
I'm not sure where we're at with Blues Fest.
They'd have to shut up.
They're going to have to. More than 500 people outdoors. It's just not going to be possible. If there's any way that you can support any of these folks that are, you know, really suffering because they can't perform anymore, please do head to their social media pages and see how they're calling out for help. You know, they might be selling merch. You might be able to buy some albums from some artists. I don't know. Does anyone buy albums anymore?
No. What do they get for a download? Couple of cents? I'm not sure.
Couple of cents for a download. Go buy yourself a film or Plum T-shirt. They're good.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you've mentioned, the Anzac Day services and memorials.
Gone.
It's gone. So we're going to have a televised event from the War Memorial.
Well, it is Australia's most important day, right? That's what the PM said.
Oh, that's according to the PM. Yep. that was an interesting statement. Obviously, Anzac Day is a is a very important day for a lot of people and a lot of mums as well.
I get confused. I don't know if it's January 26 or April 25. I get very confused.
Well, look, are they recognising the Frontier Wars yet? Because that might
no.
They might bump it up a little.
No. Now, sport. Let's get on to some sport. What can we watch? This is why I'm playing Xbox, because everything's shut down. I'm a big fan of Liverpool in the EPL. I've got to wait till April before they can take the title, hopefully, with two more games. But in Australia, we've only got NRL and AFL pushing ahead. They're going to have a bit of a tilt at getting or keeping their seasons going. The A-League has condensed its fixtures in the hope of getting through the season, completing it before everything gets shut down. Is there anything else that is going? And then we can just say the rest is off.
Esports.
Esports are going. Esports on the rise.
So, yeah. Esports are absolutely on the rise. Obviously, any big tournaments that were going to be held in person, any LAN tournaments are going to have to be cancelled. But online tournaments, totally fine. So if you're into a Dota or want to check it out, maybe watching FIFA tournaments is the closest we're going to get.
You are enjoying that aspect of it, I bet.
This is a really good time for video games. Absolutely. And we've had a bunch of new really great ones released recently as well. So, yeah, there's the new Animal Crossing game if you've got a Switch. The new Doom Eternal game, which is so much fun. I've been playing that one on PC. I've had the Beat Saber going on the PlayStation VR. There's the new Ori game, which is so beautiful. I've been playing that one on Xbox Game Pass. There's just so much. There's too much. It's great.
Yep. Check them out. That's anything new coming out for Xbox 360, right?
not on the 360, Jack. Oh, bless. No, but if you do want to upgrade, there are some pretty good bundle deals at the moment. And if you get Game Pass, then you have access to a huge library of games that you don't have to pay for because you're paying for a subscription. It's like Netflix for games. It's great.
I'll highly recommend. Bust open my piggy bank.
Yeah, smash the piggy bank. Go get yourself even just one of the digital consoles is fine. Then you don't have to worry about discs. Saves the environment.
Paper black.
And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for in this special COVID-19 coronavirus episode of Take It Black.
Now, Ray, just before we finish up, I just want to mention news outside of COVID-19. This week on Wednesday in Victoria, we had the announcement of the Victorian Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. There's around $10 million in it, but it's not about the money. The Vic Premier Dan Andrews and his Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, Gavin Jennings, was joined by Kutcher Edwards, Mick Edwards, Ever Joe Edwards on Wednesday. Now, they delivered a really powerful statement in response to the announcement, and we're going to listen to that now.
We as the Edwards family and all Stolen Gens members, we're not here to talk about redress or money, or how many tens of millions and how many people involved. We're here to talk about the pain that we've suffered. Not physically, but culturally and spiritually. Imagine if it was done to your child or yours. And the media wants to know how we're feeling now. We've carried this for over 52 years. And it's not about physical pain. You could cut my legs off today, I couldn't give a damn. But I've lived with the trauma of being denied my rightful journey in life.
I guess for me it's about acknowledging that this has taken 23 years since the tabling of the Bringing Them Home report. Number 3 of the 54 recommendations that a reparation was sought for us, the Stolen Generations.
I still stand tall. In today's world, I'm in my mid-60s now. I've lived with scars on my soul, which I've hidden for a long time. They're not going to come out and show themselves just because something like money's come along the road. I've missed out on the men's circles, our law, our love and want for our Mother Earth.
I don't speak on behalf of myself. I speak on behalf of all those Stolen Gen brothers and sisters that we have come together, we have united to fight for the rights to be acknowledged.
I take the courage on behalf of all Stolen Gen's members and our auntie, Auntie Eunice, and her family.
It is so important that this recognition comes. It is so important that it's that we know that the policies of the past were wrong.
And that is all we have time for now. Don't forget to subscribe to Take It Black on your preferred podcasting app.
And remember to join the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag Take It Black. And while you're there, throw us a follow. Something to keep an ear out for while you're all self-isolating.
And until we can bring you the next episode, don't forget to take it black.
Always was, always will be. Always.